This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you who want a great shave experience at a fraction of what you're paying, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code WhatTheTech when you check out. What the Tech? Hey, buddy, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. I'm joined by Paul Thorat, as I'm each and every week. How you doing, Paul?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Very good. I had a nickname for you, and I totally forgot to do it. I was going to call you Paul, the true inventor of USB Type-C, Thorat.
You saw that.
Who invented USB Type-C, Paul?
It was probably a quorum of companies that are part of the USB.
It's a big debate here on the internet.
It's not really much of a debate.
People are claiming
like
Apple invented it.
Seems like someone made something up, but it became a fact.
Yeah, Apple's claiming it, apparently, and Google now, which I actually want to talk about USB Type-C.
Apple's not claiming it. Some Apple fan is claiming it.
Yeah, people are claiming that Apple invented it. There's so much to talk about today. I do want to talk about USB Type-C because I was actually really surprised the day after Apple's announcement that all these companies now came out saying, well, we're doing it too.
Well, anyone can do it. It's an open standard. That's the point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's for everyone. And Apple never claimed otherwise. I mean, I think they were just the first major PC maker to, you know, announce a machine.
It wasn't the shocker that people are going to incorporate this. It was the shocker that the response was so quick to it as if it's a huge deal. That USB-C, you know, Type-C is going to be this huge deal, and it's going to be standardized across everything.
I'm going to guess, and I think you'll agree this is at least a semi-educated guess, which is that the sudden appearance of USB-C is related to some Intel chipset thing that's related to a very specific version or versions of their chips and the motherboards that they make and all that kind of stuff, and that this is not a coincidence. It's happening now because this is when this stuff is just coming to market. So it's no big conspiracy. It's no big deal.
Do you welcome it as far as a standard for power? You know, power. Connecting
absolutely.
Power.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? This is the worst part of. Well, okay, that's a bit of a stretch. But one of the things that's bad, I think, about all these devices we have that are not phones, you know, unless you have iPhones, is that you can't use the same power cord on everything. You have to, you know. And in my position, which granted is unique, you could sort of imagine me going on a trip with a laptop and the wrong power supply, you know, which is goofy.
Yeah.
But more to the point, for normal people, I mean, you upgrade and everything. I mean, how nice would it be if you have a machine that died and it's just not worth anything other than the scrap, keep the power cord and keep using it if you want to. I mean, I think that's huge. Just for the same reason that, you know, micro USB is a big deal.
Yeah.
On phones.
It's interesting because it's like the old school cell phone mentality, right? When it comes to this with the power cords.
Yeah.
Like everybody has their own standard and their own voltage, and it depends on, you know, everything is all over the place. Sometimes you got the bigger ends and sometimes you got the fatter ends, and Apple has their own thing and Samsung has their own thing. So it's kind of, I mean, the standardization, I welcome it. I'm curious if we're going to see the trend in the PC market when it comes to just one port devices.
No. One port is ridiculous. That's dumb. But no, I think we'll see multiple port devices. But by the way, I mean, these are just, this is a nicety. But imagine any laptop, and for whatever reason, it's got two ports, like one on either side. So maybe you're a lefty. So you want to plug the peripheral on the other side or whatever, the power cable, and not have cables be in the way while using a computer. I mean, it's not a huge thing, but just that choice, I think, is a nice, a nice deal. And by the way, for whatever it's worth, when Apple announced that thing, I thought, you know, this is cute for them, but a real beefy laptop, you know, is never going to be able to have this kind of power supply. But actually, yes, it can. And that's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the connecting end is going to all be the same. I mean, the power supply itself will depend on whatever the hardware requires.
Yeah, it'll be a little bigger or whatever. Yeah. Just like it is today. You know, if you plug an iPad into one of the smaller phone type chargers, you know, it works, but it's slow, you know, or something like that. Or maybe if you plug it into your computer, it will power it, but it won't charge, you know, that kind of thing.
Another thing that I was a little curious about is the fact that they didn't go like lightning bolt, you know, like for the power adapt. They didn't do some proprietary power.
Yeah. So what I'm hoping is that Apple drops lightning right now and it moves everything to this new standard.
Lightning and just has one cable. What is it? It's Lightning and there's Thunderbolt. Lightning is on.
Well, Thunderbolt's not an Apple thing. It's an Apple. Well, actually, that's not fair. I think Apple probably had a hand in creating that. But
yeah,
Lightning. Sorry, the new USB-C replaces both of those things essentially, right? As well as proprietary power, like the MagSafe power they had on laptops. And so it really is this one thing that does everything. Apple's mistake on this device, I think, was just having one port. There's no reason it couldn't have had two. It would have been great.
The next one will. That's why. That's the reason. Why doesn't it have it? Because the next one will.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I see it.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Or, I mean, it could have just been that they didn't want to put it on the other side because it thins down too much, and the logic board that they're incorporating doesn't have one on that side.
Okay. Build a logic. I mean, you know, when you design a machine, you accommodate.
You accommodate for it, yeah.
That was a design decision on their part, not a like a physical limitation. It was a decision.
It's almost like the old days of the iPhone, you know? Like, oh, this one doesn't have it, but we justify it by saying, well, no, they did it, so the next one will have it, you know?
That's not a good
It's not a good way to justify
it. Let's artificially
anything.
Limit something right now, you know, at a 29-cent part or whatever.
It's yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a 29 cent par. I mean, it can't be. I can't fathom it's going to be tremendous of a cost for them to incorporate this. Except for research and development, Paul. You know, millions go into research and development R&D when it comes to USB.
Actually, well, not on Apple's behalf, but yeah, okay.
Yeah,
somebody did millions.
I can't believe that was someone's like screw you answer to us. I think we were talking about unsubsidized pricing. And I think you said something like, I cannot understand why an iPhone costs like $800 or $700, whatever the price is. And this was on like, on I think one of the Apple blogs. They took this piece from what we were saying and they put it on there.
Really?
And yeah, it was like a huge thread about what idiots we are. And this guy goes, for me, I agree. I am the idiot of the show. But Paul, not so much. Paul knows what he's talking about.
No, we're not.
That's not really the point. I know, but the guy goes, what these two morons are overlooking is research and development.
Yeah. Right. Apple has an infamously low research and development cost every year, especially compared to their profits. If you compare them to, you know, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, whatever, they're not in the same league. So that's cute. But I honestly, one of Apple's big strengths is they let research and development occur elsewhere. And then they look at these ideas and they hone it down to a wonderful product.
And they do a really great good job of it. Yeah.
And this is not a dig at Apple. It's you know, people always take those things the wrong way. Smart. It's a really smart business strategy.
I kind of want to touch on that. We're going to have to take a little break, but I want to go back to that because last week we did the Apple event recap show, I guess we'll call it. And I got so much positive feedback and I was so surprised by the amount of positive feedback we get.
you decided to screw it all up this week.
But I'm totally going to screw it up this week. But I wanted to kind of talk about some of the top points that people brought up just for a little bit of the show because we have a lot to talk about. But I was also shocked that I didn't get the Andrew's an idiot and he has no idea what he's talking about email that I normally do. It was mostly positive about our viewpoint. It was unanimously positive, actually, which I was surprised about. But I want to take a little break before
Something wrong with your email?
I know. Maybe I'm filtering out the "you sucks." That's what's happening. That's what started happening. But listen, I want to go into all that. But before we do, we have to take a little break and talk about our sponsor, Harry's. I'm a big fan of Harry's, as you've heard me say for many, many weeks now. Harry's been advertising with us. What is Harry's? Harry's is for guys who want a great shaving experience for a fraction of what you're paying currently. If you go to harrys.com, you get $5 off your first purchase. If you enter promo code What the Tech at checkout. Now, I'm going to tell you guys a story. I have the copy here in front of me, that I normally read, but I'm going to tell you guys an interesting story on why I personally like Harry's now. I've been using the same razors for literally 15 years. I was doing the math yesterday. I get these, you know, cheapo, chic, you know, they're thin bladed, you know, razors that I've been using for a while. And they were phenomenal. I mean, they were great and they would last me forever. But as the years have gone by, over a decade has gone by, a decade and a half, these razors last, I mean, not even two shaves at this point. And I don't really, I mean, I don't got a thick beard. It's pretty soft. My facial hair, Paul, is very soft.
yeah.
So I've been using the same exact razor for 15 years. I can't use the same razor twice anymore. The second I use it, it just tears my face apart. I mean, it's like shaving with a rock, essentially. You're not getting anything. It's just ruining your face. And I couldn't understand it. So I started reading about it, and people are actually saying, yeah, these razors that we've been using for years, you know, I was dedicated to a brand. I was dedicated to a company. They've actually cheapened the razors, and it wears out so quickly. And they're costing you a lot more, even when you go with the cheaper ones. Well, here's the thing about Harry's. It's totally high quality. The blades are super high quality. It's made in Germany. You're not going to tear your face apart. And the blades run about $4. Well, normally razor blades are expensive. They run about $4. But at Harry's, you're going to save a ton of money when you sign up for them. They have a great deal. They have the Winston set, which I have. I'm on, like, honestly, my third blade, because I really don't shave much. I leave the beard and I just shave underneath. But it's unbelievable how long this thing is lasting compared to what I've used over the last, you know, decade and a half. Harrys.com, use offer code WhatTheTech at checkout, and you get $5 off your purchase. Check out the Winston set, because it comes in a nice little kit. Also, if you want to give someone a gift, phenomenal gift. My Christmas gifts, I was the worst guy at Christmas this year. I gave everybody a Harry set. Everybody got the same gift. Everybody loved it, but everybody got the same gift. So that was my little thing about Harry's. I didn't want to read the copy. I wanted to tell you guys a story because I thought of this yesterday, and I think you guys would appreciate it if you know, this has happened to you. Harrys.com. Use offer code WhatTheTech at checkout. Thanks a lot, Harry.
Oddly enough,
the show.
Oddly
enough,
I'm also using a Harry's.
Are you? Okay, so have
I don't use the one you're using though. I use, I think it's called Truman.
The better
one. It's like an olive green color handle.
Yeah, there's a Truman, there's the Winston. The Winston is chrome, and the Truman is olive green or orange or blue. But it's still the same,
The blades are all the same, which I like.
Yeah.
That means you can just swap them up. Yeah. I think I like the blades a lot. I've been using regular shaving cream for so long, I have a hard time with gel, and I have a hard time with their kind of shave cream. Like, it's I just need to get used to it.
You know what I use? I just use regular soap.
I mean, that's what I do when I run out. But
yeah, it's $2 or less for a blade. That's actually really cheap.
It is cheap. That's why I started using it, because with the Gillette stuff that I was using, you go into like a CVS or whatever, and you buy like a little 4-pack. It's like $18.
Crazy, yeah.
Like, wait, what? Like, what is this?
They're running a racket here, guys.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Let's talk about some of the news. I'm actually going to save the last week's recap to the end, because I know you and I could talk about this for hours. So I'll save it to the end, or maybe do it in the wrap-up show, in the post-show. I want to talk about Windows 10 news. Some of the stuff that came out this week. The thing that really I thought was interesting was the local updates for Windows updates, for system updates. I thought that was actually a nice little feature here, that you don't have to download it from the server. You could actually download it from your local computer if there's another computer on your network that has the updates.
So I think it's funny. When you see P2P, people think torrents. You know, they think of that kind of thing. I will say that there is a Microsoft technology that's been around for, 6 years now, that does this on the server side. And so back, in the mid-2000s, I guess, late 2000s, 2008, let's say, one of the concerns with the Microsoft server products, right, was that you might have a medium-sized company or a big enterprise where you have businesses or offices all around the world. And some of those offices aren't connected very well. You know, maybe you have a corporate acquisition or something. So they created this technology called Branch Cache, where someone could download the Windows updates to their PC, and then the other PCs in the office, when it's time for them to download the updates, they'll look around the office first. And if those updates are already on someone else's PC, they'll install them that way. And so when I look at this, what I see is this is Branch Cache for client, if that makes sense. This is that technology for consumers, essentially. You know, download it once. Like, you have a household full of PCs, download the updates once. I mean, and then they'll move. Then they can move around your home network.
I mean, that there's multiple reasons why they're doing this. One, obviously, because it takes strain off the servers for the Windows updates. Two, it's a much faster update when it's local. Obviously, it's either going to be, if you got a gigabit network at home, you're going to be able to download this thing at a really quick rate. Windows updates take forever on Windows 7 if you have an if you do a clean install and you got to do everything from nothing. The other question I had was, is it all peer-to-peer even if you're not doing it within your network? Now it's going to be peer-to-peer out in cyberspace?
Right. I mean, look, we're looking at a screenshot here, so it's kind of hard to tell how it's going to work. They haven't announced this yet. So based on what we see in the shot, I guess what I would say is there are a couple of different options you can check. One of the things would be just local, I think, and one of them would be also on the internet. You know, you could download from other Windows users around the world, I guess. You could enable that functionality if you wanted to. I think you're right. I think they're trying to decentralize this so when Patch Tuesday happens or a big Windows 10 build comes down the pike, you know, sometime in the next 6 weeks or whatever, that the one server or whatever that, you know, the one location for this isn't getting hammered by everybody. You know, I think that's ultimately the point.
Yeah, and that's fine. Couple other quick things. Windows is smaller now. It does not require a recovery partition. They've slimmed it down. I guess this is the one unified, you know, operating system on multiple platforms mentality where, listen, let's shrink this thing.
So, yeah, this is not perfect. I have to think that Microsoft was acceding to the demands of device makers who wanted to ship the cheapest possible devices in order to achieve some form of volume. And that one of the ways they can do that is to ship them with less RAM and less onboard storage. And that to do this, Microsoft had to look at ways of kind of compressing the OS image on there. And one of the ways they did it was what you're describing. The problem is that recovery partition is, in fact, often needed.
Yeah.
And so if your system files get corrupt, you will need to have created a system backup or a recovery disk, if you will, or like a USB key or a DVD drive or whatever, so you can recover that system. Otherwise, you're going to have to go figure that out somehow. Now, you can download one from the internet and all that kind of stuff, but I think that Microsoft could save – well, actually, I guess they have technically kind of done this. So with Windows 8.1, they offer you the ability to download the Windows 8.1 media from the internet and create a disk that can also function as that recovery disk. As long as they have that option, I guess this is okay. But I think the big missing piece here is when you have an iPod Touch or an iPhone or an Android – well, Android, not really. Let's talk about iOS because that's the most managed environment. You know, you have the ability to connect that thing to a PC and download through the iTunes app the OS image needed to recover that thing.
Sure.
You know, if you screw it up, although there's not really – a lot of instances, where that happens.
I mean, if it happens,
you can do it.
Yeah, you have an option.
You can do it. Now, you know, Windows is a different thing. Windows is a much more complex legacy operating system. There is not today anyway, and I don't know that it's coming in Windows 10, but there's no real system for, I have borked this little tablet, let me plug it into my big PC, and I can use that to recover it. Like, that to me is not a thing. And I guess the only thing I'm worried about here is that in their mad dash to, you know, shave space so they have enough on there that you can actually use the device, that, you know, you have to be able to get it back. So, I mean, unfortunately, most people who spend $99 or $200 on a cheap Windows device are not going to necessarily be sophisticated enough or inclined enough or even know to do it and make that recovery backup, and that they might one day find themselves in a kind of a tough position. So I'm a little worried about that aspect of it.
So Stream Hunter in our chat says maybe a cloud recovery system, something based cloud recovery.
Yep.
I mean, that could be the solution that we don't know about. You know, what they're saying, well, you don't need the partition, but as long as your computer's
working. I'm not saying it's
not
happening. I just don't know anything about it. And so far there's been nothing to indicate that that's coming. I mean, the ability to connect to Wi-Fi or whatever from a recovery environment and download the rest of the files you need, perfect, right? That would solve the problem. I mean, unless you're offline, obviously, and can't get online for whatever reason. I mean, nothing's going to be perfect, but I just hope they've thought through these recovery scenarios, because as I read the description of this, I thought, oh, this is going to be a problem.
Well, do you remember the problem I had with the Surface? My friend's original Surface, he gave it to me. He's like, this thing is a waste. I can't even use it. There was apparently some sort of glitch with the original Surface, right, where you couldn't go into it would attempt to go into recovery.
I had that problem with Windows, the RT device,
It was with the Surface RT. I and you had to do some crazy command prompt, and it was overly complicated to be able to get this to work. But I couldn't get into recovery. I mean, the recovery partition was not accessible. So I had to do some crazy thing to finally get it. I think Darren, one of our viewers, he was the one that was able to kind of guide me through and took the time to, like, you know, explain how this works. But can you imagine that if you don't have a partition? I mean, that's a nightmare, really.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, and yeah, you know, like, right. I said, most people shouldn't have to know anything about this and won't. And they'll go to reset their device, you know, maybe whatever, it doesn't matter why. And it says, hey, you need some files, you know, or you need a recovery part, you know, or it just doesn't boot or whatever. I mean, I just worried about those guys. And so we'll see how this works in real life. I mean, today there's also an issue about the predecessor to this technology is on some Windows 8.1 devices. You know, I mean, we already have 16 gig devices like that Winbook tablet. And 32 gig devices like the HP Stream 7 that today can't be updated to the Windows 10 technical preview because they already have like what Microsoft calls a compressed OS. And there just isn't enough disk space on there to hold all the constituent parts that are needed so that if anything goes wrong during setup, they can then go back to the previous version, right? So they don't just you don't just have to have enough space on disk for the new OS.
Yeah.
You need enough space for the old one too, right? Because, you know, just in case. And these things don't have that much space.
So also, as we said last week, that's it for IE. Sayonara, guys. See you guys later.
Well, yeah.
It's IE.
Well, it's not. I mean, I don't think anything actually changed. I mean,
no, yeah,
Project Spartan will be called whatever it's called. We already knew it wouldn't be called IE. And IE is still around. I mean, they're not updating it per se, but I mean, the.
It's just not the. The search, the Explorer, the Internet Explorer version, what we think of it. Spartan is not in preview 2?
Well, we don't have the new preview, but it's not in there yet.
Right? The last build that we know of, what is it, 10?
We don't know what the source of that is. I mean, that doesn't mean it's not going to be in the one we get. I believe that they said it would be in the next public build, so it's not in the one that leaked.
I'm imagining this thing is going to be really quick.
Quick?
As far as a fast browser.
Oh, the browser.
Yeah. When you compare it to IE, you know, I think that...
Yeah.
People are a little concerned with how it's going to work, but it's essentially going to be IE, whatever the next generation IE is.
Of a bunch of legacy crap.
Yeah,
right?
Stripped from the legacy garbage and just much more efficient. Yeah.
I mean, all new app. It's a universal app. I wasn't around when they were building it, but presumably it's not based in any part on the IE application. I mean, I assume they plug the engine and all that stuff into a new app, and that, you know, that too may help with the performance.
The modern app version of IE, are they doing Spartan all over again for that too, or are they just kind of rebranding it? Because that is essentially a new app, you know, new browser.
Yeah, so that was a different situation. You know, in Windows 8, the modern app platform, you know, Metro or whatever, was going to kind of take over. You know, Win32 was in a sort of, hold and, stay tuned kind of mode, and they were pushing forward with modern. So the updated platform is now this universal app platform, and it's in under the system, which is, you know, obviously a new version of modern, really. These apps, you know, appear to run on the desktop. They're on the desktop. They're not just full screen apps. But they can also run on phone and tablets and PCs, right? So you can essentially have, it's not exactly, but you basically have a single EXE, a single application, let's say, that runs across each, and it adapts to the size of the screen and the orientation of the screen and all that kind of stuff. So it's a more sophisticated thing. With modern, you know, you had one version, well, you had the modern version, which was Windows 8 tablets and PCs. It only ran full screen. And then you had one for Windows Phone. In Windows 10 now, on phone, on tablets, and PCs, you'll have a single universal app. Again, essentially, a single universal app. It will run full screen, or it will run windowed. It will run and look appropriate on PCs, tablets, and phones, right? So it's a more sophisticated thing. It's an evolution of what they had done first in modern.
Interesting. Anything I'm missing from the latest leaks?
I think the only other, I actually don't think we're in for any huge surprises. I would love to be proven wrong on that, but there are little things that matter a lot. You know, one of the things we sort of always knew that was coming was the on Windows, and this is kind of like big Windows, if you will, not phone Windows, is the ability to install apps as well as all of your data, you know, documents, music, et cetera, on a micro SD card or some other form of removable external storage, right? That's a capability we've had on Windows phones since, I guess, Windows Phone 8.1. I have a hard time remembering what happened when, but when you see how they're combining the systems, you think, of course they're going to do this. I mean, Windows 8 Plus already has the ability to, you know, move your documents and things like that to micro SD or whatever. Surely Windows 10 on the desktop and on tablets and laptops will have this as well. And we do see that in the leak build. And that's fantastic. That's important. And it's important on those low memory devices or low storage devices we were talking about earlier as well.
Windows Hello, that was the thing I was forgetting.
Oh, they just announced that today. Yeah. So this is kind of the biometric stuff. They'd actually talked this up very vaguely back in January. They were talking about how they joined the FIDO Alliance, which is a set of companies that are trying to figure out ways to let people authenticate themselves against, you know, devices of all kinds without having to enter complex passwords. And so Windows 10 will support facial recognition with special kinds of cameras. You can't just use any web camera. Iris scan as well, same deal, special kinds of cameras. And then fingerprint touch and swipe. And so swipe is kind of the legacy style. Like if you have a Lenovo device, you might have seen one, or HP had these as well. Swipe your thumb or other finger on there. The touch will work like it does on an Apple device where you kind of press your fingerprint up to it and it just kind of works. These systems are by definition two-factor, which is important for security. And they're opt-in, right? They're not 100% completely replacing passwords, although I suppose eventually you could do that. And then, of course, Passport extends this scheme to applications, to web apps and websites, things like that. And obviously all of Microsoft services will work. So if you log into your machine with, an iris scan or not, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Or fingerprint. Yeah,
you can be forward authenticated through to Outlook.com if it's set up that way. Or maybe you just log on to your computer. I'm trying to think why you would do this. But technically speaking, you could log on to your computer normally. And then maybe use like a PIN password to get onto Outlook.com. They'll support different authentication types and you can kind of mix and match.
So they're going to incorporate this with all their products, essentially, where authenticate once or twice, you're authenticated throughout.
Yeah, you're in.
You're in. You don't have to type a password in.
Yep.
That's actually great. It's actually really good.
Yeah. And the theory here, you know, people, it's not secure. It's, you know... if somebody steals your password, they're in. Doesn't matter where they are. It doesn't matter what time of day it is. Doesn't matter what device they're using. With a two-factor scheme like this, you need something that you own, like a device, and you need something that you have, like your eyeball or your face or something. And you can't hold up like a picture of your eye or a picture of your face. That doesn't work like that. And so these are, in fact, very secure systems. And as important, they're also very easy on the user. I mean, if you look at the Microsoft demo video, basically – you just sit down in front of the computer, the camera sees you, and you're in. And that's it. And you know, I guess we can sort of ponder the possibilities of your evil identical twin, you know, stealing your identity or whatever. But, you know, for the most part, I think this looks pretty viable. I'm very interested to see this in the real world.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, that's the direction we're headed in. You know, the fact that we have to type in a password every time we want to do something, it really... it's an inconvenience for everybody, but I understand why we do it. But once you authenticate once with the operating system and it knows it's you, why do you need to do it?
And can continually and silently verify that it's still you. You know
What the only problem is with this? It's constantly looking at you. So if there's some sort of vulnerability,
sure.
You know,
it's opt-in. I mean, by the way, the other interesting aspect of this, this hasn't been written about by anyone yet, I don't think, but I think this is an important deal, is, you know, before this announcement made it so specific, a lot of the talk around Windows 10 devices was there was no reason to wait. You know, there was nothing coming in Windows 10 that would negate the appeal of a Lenovo ThinkPad, you know, X1 Carbon or, you know, this HP Spectre X360 or whatever machine you like. Except now you have to think, well, hold on a second. Actually, you know, if you do want to use this kind of pass-through seamless authentication, you may in fact want a new device because obviously there'll be add-on peripherals, but that's like more stuff to carry and more stuff to manage. You know, it's like a like putting a webcam on a laptop or something. Like you could do it, but actually these devices that have special iris or facial scanners that are very specific, they're not web cameras, or have, you know, that fingerprint kind of thing. You know, maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to wait to get that kind of thing. If you're going to use that, I mean, and you don't need a laptop or whatever right this second. This may in fact represent a good example of some Windows 10 specific hardware that's very interesting and worth waiting for.
Listen, I'm waiting, you know, so I'm in desperate need for a computer too. And I'm waiting because I know I'm going to buy something now and then regret it in 3 months. And that tends to happen a lot. I want to move on to this Nintendo news because they're still like half-assing it. You know what I mean?
Okay, so look, I come from a Microsoft background, so I will view this through the lens of what Microsoft faced and what they did, and I will tell you that it is exactly the same, which is this. It's hard when you control the world to accept the fact that you no longer control the world. It's like the British Empire thing after World War II, or however you want to say it. You know, Microsoft was on top of the PC world. Personal computing moved to phones and to tablets, to web services, you know, web apps and so forth. And they were kind of caught unprepared. And so for a little while, they talked this game where it was like, well, you know, Windows is still the most important thing in the world and it will all go through Windows and you'll do everything on Windows. And it sort of ignored the fact that in real world, people were moving over to these other things. And now they've kind of embraced it, right? We see mobile first, cloud first, and all that kind of stuff. Nintendo is in the same exact situation. It's just gaming, right? And by the way, they face the same future, perhaps, where, well, except that they don't, where they could have like a big system on consoles, except that they don't. But that's not the majority of the places where people play games, you know? They have a beloved brand, brands, I should say, in the Mario games, Zelda, and so on. They have great, great games and great, great brands. Game franchises, but they have no push into mobile, and so they're going to go into it slowly because that's how these big companies have to do that. They have to experiment with it. But when Nintendo sees great success with some of these games, like I think they will, what you were alluding to is they're not going to take their most popular games and put them on mobile. They're going to take the characters from those games and make new games
and put those on mobile.
And they're going to use an excuse that sounds perfectly reasonable on the face of it, which is this. We wrote those games for consoles that had like controllers with certain buttons and they worked a certain way. And you played them on this big screen. And the mobile devices have these tiny screens and they're touch. And so the interaction is completely different and we can't do exactly the same games. And that sounds perfectly reasonable, except that what people want are the exact same games. And so I think they will get there. And then there'll be some false steps. I think they'll have some big hits too that will be touched specific games.
Paul, they could supply you with a Bluetooth controller that will work on an iPad, for example.
They could supply you with a Bluetooth clip-on, or not anything, with Bluetooth, whatever, clip-on controller that made your iPhone look exactly like a Nintendo controller.
Absolutely, yeah.
And people would probably snap them up in droves. Although, as with Microsoft, you have to be a little worried that they waited too long. You know, that the volume of people playing portable games on mobile devices, what Nintendo calls smart devices, things that are primarily smartphones and tablets, but also PCs, by the way, that's part of their plan, is far bigger than the number of people playing video games on any Nintendo device, portable or otherwise. And so there's a little bit of a worry that they've waited too long. We hear that a lot now with tech companies.
Well, they did. I mean, but here's the thing. What did they sell? 9 million, 10 million? We use, which is
like in 2.5 years.
In 2.5 years, so that, I mean that's awful. That's barely.
So this is selling at a rate that's less than 25% of the PS4.
Yeah,
you know, that's where they're at. So,
but
yeah, they had a 1 year head start.
But Paul, you know what the reason was? A, the consoles it did not have a good start to the launch. It was sluggish, whatever it was. But they didn't release any original titles. All these games that people have been wanting, Zelda, for example, it's still not here. We still don't have Zelda. I mean, they released one Mario game. A lot of these titles that people wanted were not there. So why are people going to buy this console if the games are not there? And they're probably going to suffer from the same issue with the next console. If these games are delayed, they're anticipating this is going to be released in a year and a half.
Well, I mean, the mobile strategy gives them the opportunity to do second screen stuff, right? And it also gives them the opportunity to design that next thing. What is it called? The X1 or something, or NX? Or
NX, yeah.
To be smarter when you have a second device, right? I think they did something like that with Wii U. Maybe if you had a one of their portable devices or whatever. I don't remember exactly. So there's opportunity here. I mean, I and they do have a very loyal audience. It's smaller and smaller, you know, than it used to be. But they have kind of a Disney-like reputation for quality and also just for kind of kid-friendly entertainment and that kind of stuff. I think they have a good chance to do something good here. And I mean, like many, I'm not like a lone voice in the wilderness. Everyone has been asking them to get onto mobile. Stupid they waited this long. Stupid.
I mean, I think the future of this company is going to, I mean, they, you know, we saw what happened to Sega, but I think Nintendo has a far better.
Sega is the future of this company.
Yeah, they're Sega, yeah. But I think they could, Sega could not monetize on accessories. They could monetize in putting their platform on different, you know, putting their games and their franchise on other platforms.
Yeah.
While Nintendo could kind of do both in a weird way. They have their DS that does really well. They have a console that doesn't do great, and you could have the major titles there, but their archives, their extensive library of games would do tremendous on you know, anywhere.
Yep.
Can you imagine that original Mario Brothers, how much money they'll make that first day that it's in the App Store?
Yeah. They will. They'll do it. It's just, they just need to get it. This is so common, you know?
It is common. I mean, you're right. They don't want to let go. I mean, at this point, they just don't want to let go of, you know, whatever they have, whatever control that they have. But it's moved. I mean, we're in a different society. I was playing a stupid game on my iPad the other night, and I played it for like an hour. And that's competing with, you know, the Xbox also, and that's competing with the PlayStation. It's taking my attention away from those consoles.
Right. Now, you know, the one bit of Nintendo's strategy that's not really going to work, I don't think, is what they hope to do is use these games as a like an upsell thing. Maybe if people enjoy these games, they'll go buy a console next time or one of their dedicated portable gaming devices, 3DS or whatever they're on now. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, I think, you know, what they're doing is reaching a bigger audience. And that bigger audience, they game on mobile. They game on devices. You know, I didn't want to spend more time on this with another thing. I just wanted to use my device, you know. And I think that's going to be the audience going forward.
It's fascinating to me, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I hope that they survive and they do well. You know, they've been around for so long. And they're very unique. They're not like anybody else, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Especially. Yeah, that's an advantage. I mean, just having that personality, you know, is kind of a neat thing for them. I waited too long. So
let's talk about the Apple TV rumors. Wall Street Journal reported on Monday that an unidentified source is claiming that the service, there's going to be a new Apple TV subscription-based service that will launch with about 25 channels, including the major networks ABC, CBS, and Fox, not NBC. We'll get to that. And it's going to run on iOS devices, including Apple TV and everything else that they had. I'm not surprised. This is going to compete with a service like Dish's Sling TV. We'll probably see the service cost about $30 a month. They're expecting it to be $30 to $40 a month. And they are having some problems right now with NBC Comcast. They don't seem to be wanting to work with them.
Well, sure. I mean, so when Apple, you know, I hate to use the term rescued because honestly it never happened, but when Apple rescued the music industry with iTunes, a lot of people were willing to jump on board because things were going south, you know. And these TV content providers have that to look back on. And what they see is the music industry still dying, you know, that iTunes in no way ever helped, you know, do anything to reverse the sales slide. It never made up for the loss of CD sales ever. So it was great for Apple, And certainly it was good for some artists and good in the sense that at least music has a place to go, you know, but it's just they didn't, you know, change things.
Well, I think what it changed was it became all about the single and not an album. You're absolutely right. Album sales didn't go up, but I'm sure these artists are doing so, better when it comes to singles.
The TV content business doesn't want the single, right? Because in that world, the single means you get to choose a channel. They don't want that because when you can choose a channel, channels disappear. People don't choose channels. They choose packages of channels. It means you get a bunch of crap you don't want necessarily, but maybe you'll surprise yourself and find something. I mean, how do you discover anything new if you just buy the couple things you know you like, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this is the right approach exactly. I mean, we know that cable bills skyrocket and all that kind of crap, but I sort of understand what's happening here, right? It's not hard to look at this situation and realize some of these guys are going to resist, just like some of them resisted. Some of the book publishers resisted iBooks. You know, you sort of see what happens in these other industries, and you're like, I don't know. Like, this is not going to, this is not going to solve our problems. It's going to be a net win for Apple. What isn't, you know? But it's not going to help me. I mean, you saw the thing about Apple Pay, right? The fraud on Apple Pay is, I think it's 3 or 4 times higher than normal credit card fraud.
Really? I didn't see that.
Yeah. So why is that, right? There's nothing inherently insecure about Apple Pay. Actually there kind of is. Sorry. But as far as, it's not like someone grabs your iPhone and now they can use all your credit cards. That's not actually how the fraud works. The way the fraud works is someone has stolen a credit card number, right? And so if I gave you my credit card number and all the information you needed to use that card, there's certain things you could do with that information, but there's certain things you couldn't do. And one of the things you couldn't do would be walk into a store and use that information to buy anything because you don't have a card. But when you're putting cards in a phone, now you do have a card because you have the phone and that's how you make the payment. So you can just scan a card once, it's in the phone, and now you can take that phone and go steal stuff with it. And that's how the fraud's happening. And so there's another example of Apple wanted to make the user experience for users, you know, really simple and seamless. And it is. It's so simple and seamless that thieves are using it to steal people's credit cards more easily than they ever did in before. So here's the thing. There's a liability to this, right? The liability for Apple is zero. The billions of dollars that have been lost by fraud by this scheme are paid by banks, not by Apple.
Yeah.
Just like the problem with iPhones when you can't get connected to the internet is not Apple's problem, even though it was
in fact their
problem. It's the wireless carrier's The problem is always someone else's problem. So Apple always finds a way to succeed and to make money. And their partners, the music industry, the wireless carriers, the Apple Pay partners, these guys are the ones who get screwed every time. So you kind of understand, right?
Why they don't want to get involved.
Like, why are we going down this path exactly?
But I mean, I'll give an example.
Understandable.
Right now, when you go on your Apple TV, you have access to ABC. You have access to Fox. You know, they have their shows. They're on-demand
shows. So I've never
used
any of that stuff. I mean, how does that work? What does it mean to have access to ABC?
So
what does that give me?
Well, the way that it works is that they have their ABC app, for example.
Yep.
You click on the ABC app. It says, hey, go to whatever.com, put in your carrier information, and you'll get this code.
Okay. So it's like HBO Go then. First, you have to be paying for it somehow through your cable provider.
Yeah.
Right? Is that okay?
Then you have access to all the shows.
Right.
You know,
it's not technically free. So in other words, so I'm on my TV. I could just put on the TV and watch TV. But now I got this other thing that's like a front end to my TV. And so I have to go to the Apple TV. I have to log in, like you said, to this thing.
It's on-demand program. It's only on-demand.
Then I can watch some TV?
So it's on-demand programming. Okay. I don't know if they're doing live. They may do live. I've never watched the live stuff, but it's on-demand programming.
I've never watched it. I'm literally asking. I'm sort of imagining how this would work. I sort of get it from HBO Go or whatever.
You log in. So, let's say you want to watch Scandal. And the latest episode of
Scandal's there. You understand, though, from a user's perspective and from Apple's perspective, this scheme doesn't help too much. It's not
I'll
great.
Tell you why it helps with a user perspective.
Yep.
Let's say you missed a show, right? You don't DVR it. You missed
the
show.
You have on-demand on your TV.
On-demand delays it.
Okay.
ABC has it on within hours.
All right. There's some, okay.
There's stuff,
but you understand. But you understand the next level up from this would be, let's get these guys off the picture. Like, let's not have the cable provider. And so now you understand why these things are expensive. Apple service is going to cost $30 to $40 a month. You know, I mean, this stuff really is being paid for one way or the other.
I mean, but
it's a lot of money to pay. that's for a, I mean, 25 channels. That's a cable package, isn't it? Yeah,
it kind of
is.
If
you just have cable, why would you get this instead of cable? Like, I don't understand.
Well, that's a really good question. How much is basic cable? If I were to just get basic cable.
I bet right it's now. In this ballpark. It's got to be.
Let's see. Verizon Fios. Let's find out.
No, Fios is not.
Okay, Time Warner. Anything. Time Warner like cable. Or let's see packages. Plans and packages.
Yeah.
TV plans. So you get, there you go. 20 channels plus 50 megabit internet is $44.
So,
20 plus channels. Let's see. Include.
Yeah,
see,
but you
channels.
Also get internet.
You also get internet. So you're getting
Xfinity. Yeah, Xfinity 10 plus channels.
Okay, here are the channels. Ready? ABC, CBS, C-SPAN, 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 CW, Fox, Galavision, HSN, NBC, PBS, QVC, Home Shopping, TBN, TBN, Alternative Broadcasting Network, TBS, Telemundo, and Univision. So this is like basic. It's just basic television with just a little bit more.
Yep.
Okay, so that's the starter package. You're getting 20 channels for $44 with
internet. Hold on a second. So here's here's one without internet. Xfinity TV, 45 plus channels.
Okay.
Just TV. It's called Digital Economy, $29.
Okay, so here you go. 70 stations, $39.
I'm going to try to figure out the best deal.
Yeah,
I have 190 plus channels for 30. Oh, those are Latino channels. Actually, that's pretty fun.
So you're getting 70 channels on Time Warner, just standard TV. Yeah. Which is you get HD channels, obviously. And it's $39 for the first year, $44 the second year. So here, that's a great question. Why would I pay for Apple TV if it's going to be $40? And we're not saying it's $40. I'm not saying it's $30. But if it's close in that vicinity, why would I buy that package?
Yeah. By the way, $14, 10 local channels. Why would you? Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, if it's locked to an Apple TV device, it's a little less interesting than if you could somehow watch this on portable devices, obviously, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess if you were traveling.
Sure, but I think you came with the Time Warner application. You could view them on your mobile devices.
Okay.
I believe you can.
Look, I maybe we're overthinking this. I think this thing will be semi-competitive. I guess the deal here is, are you okay with not having local service? Could you live a pure IP-based existence, right? I think some people could. I mean, obviously what you're missing out here are things like local sports, which is important to people, which maybe you could get over the air for free if you had the kind of know-how to make that happen.
I think that's what's going to sell this. If you have sports on this.
Yeah.
They're going to have to partner up with a couple sport channels.
The way their response to that is going to be, we have sports. You can get MLB, whatever the MLB app, which is a subscription. You know, you can get the NFL version, which is a subscription, or will be when they have it, or whatever. Everything's a subscription. You know, it's going to be more and more and more. I mean, eventually, for all this cable cutting, people are going to find out they're spending just as much every month on entertainment. I cannot believe how much TV costs.
It's obscenely
expensive.
We're like expensive.
Cows chewing cud at night, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, my cable bill is $230 a month.
Oh, sure.
And I barely watch any TV. I can't remember the only time. I put on the news in the morning, and that's it. I put on local news, and I don't even need cable for that. The only thing I really watch is sports and pro wrestling. So,
you. Thank you for separating those into two categories.
Well, professional wrestling is a separate entity than professional sports.
Sure.
Those are the only real things that I watch that I would need to watch live. And you know what? I don't even need to watch wrestling because Hulu has it the following day.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah.
I could cut if I wanted to.
Most of the TV I watch is not live. I mean, and like the vast majority of it.
Yeah.
In fact, as you probably experience as well, when forced to watch live TV, not sports, but I mean like an actual show. Well, sports too, but it's maddening, right? You know, like having to wait, like the commercials are maddening, like not being able to skip over them is maddening, but you have to kind of pay for that right, you know, one way or the other.
People are saying,
you'll pay.
People in the chat room are blown away by my bill. Let's just say I have five cable boxes in the house. I have two DVRs, so I could cut here and there. I have all, you know, all the premium channels.
No, I don't remember what ours is, but it's very expensive, and we have, you know, two cable boxes. We have kids and everything, and you know, but it's internet and it's phone, two phone lines as well.
Yeah, it's crazy expensive. I think there's a market for this. Obviously, there are going to be people that don't care to get. You know, they don't want to get the DVR box. They don't want to get the cable box. I think what happens with a lot of people, and the same thing happens with me, when you sign up for cable, right? You sign up for that $39 we found, right? That package from Time Warner. Then you sign up, then they're like, well, on-demand services. You want on-demand, that's another $10. Oh, right. you want to get another cable box, that's another $10. You want a DVR, that's $15 a month. So slowly that $40 will end up becoming...
It all sounds so reasonable, but then you... Right, the actual bill comes in, it's
$179 because
like,
then...
What the hell just happened here, you know?
Yeah. Like, I'm in a position where when it comes to cable, I can't drop a package. Because if I drop a package, then other things go up.
That's how they get you.
You know, I think
why,
it's
that's
like,
why we eventually left Fios. So we
it's $200 for the cable, right? Just alone at the cable's $200. Then it's like $29 for the phone, and then the rest is the internet. But if I were to cut the phone out, then another $5 goes on this one, another $5 goes on that one. If I cut my package... My internet bill goes up by $20. Right. So,
Because you're sort of saving money by doing everything through the same company.
Yeah.
When you start cutting, that's how they get back at you.
And that's the problem. And listen, there's a lot of people that don't care for that. If you live in a one bedroom apartment or you have a studio apartment and you just have an Apple TV and you don't want to pay for a cable package, you don't want to sign up to a 2-year agreement with a cable company because you may not be you may be moving. You know what? $30 a month sounds kind of good. It's doable.
Yep.
You're paying $30 a month for that, then you're paying another $10 for, you know.
Even $30 a month. Can you imagine, like, they probably lock you in a year or something. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, I'm positive they do.
So terrible.
But $20 a month, I want to do the math for a second. And we did this last week, I think. Okay. $30 a month, plus you're going to get, let's say you get, if I were to cut the cord right now, just cut it and I just go with a service
In other words, it would be something like this plus Netflix.
Plus Netflix, plus Hulu, which I have.
Well, I mean, I'd say Hulu you don't need because of this.
Okay.
Maybe HBO Go or whatever.
HBO Go.
Yeah, I mean, and then you would need to, you know, assuming you're not moving around, I mean, what you would want to do is figure out some sort of an HDTV antenna.
Which I have that. Yeah, I have one of those.
You know, but, for your local stuff, local news and sports and stuff.
So there's a couple of questions here. One, I have to buy... an Apple TV for every room that I have a cable box in.
Do you? I guess you do.
Well, kind of. I mean, if I'm replacing existing cable service for me, I would have to put it in. I'm sure by the time
the service
comes out,
do you get the service across devices, or do you have to pay for?
You don't with the Sling TV.
Yeah.
So I'm almost sure that you're going to have to get this service on whatever device. It authenticates per device.
Right.
So 40, 60, 80. You know what? Listen, I'm speculating here, but it adds up at the end.
I mean, the HBO is 15, Netflix is 10, something like that, 25. Let's say this thing's 35 times 2 is 70. You're talking about $100.
$100 a month. You're back to where you were.
But, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that's okay. No, that isn't okay. What am I saying? that's a lot of money.
At the end, listen, the bottom line is you're gonna pay for the content, no matter where you go. Unless you pirate everything.
I was going to say, unless you feel like stealing it. Yeah.
Unless you have a...
We're making a compelling case for torrent right now.
Listen, unless you get the Plex that we discussed, unless you get Plex and you got a friend that has a server somewhere.
Did I ever tell you? I told you the resolution of that, right? That it was my a friend who had stayed over had... Did I tell you the story?
No, you told me that you had access to some guy's...
Okay, I figured out what it was.
Okay.
So this is so messed up. So the story, for those of you who don't remember, was that I installed Plex around and out in the Roku in the living room. I installed it. And so, or I went to install it. It was already installed. I thought, well, of course, you know, I installed this previously, whatever. So when I turn it on out in the living room, it logs into some guy's account and I've got access to all these like Hollywood movies and that are still in theaters now and everything. And I watched the Hobbit movie, for example. And I thought, this is really strange. Like, is there some kind of peer-to-peer thing going on here? Is this person in my neighborhood? Like, why do I have this? I had no idea. So one day I was kind of tooling around in the you know, in the interface, and there were photos. And I'm like, oh my God, I have this guy's photos. That's really strange. And so I started flipping through the photos, and I started recognizing some of the people in the thing. And then I thought, wait a minute, I know this person, and they had visited months ago, like last summer. And what I remember was that the guy, it was a couple, but the guy, we would go to bed, and he's like, I'm going to stay up for a while and watch TV. And he would stay up like until 3 o'clock in the morning. And what he had done was he had connected it to his account, I guess.
Yeah, so
I had,
he probably has a server at home.
Yeah, so it's like when he said he's watching TV, what he meant was he's watching his stuff.
His stuff at home.
I just never thought, you know, who cares? I mean, like, whatever. But and he never thought to disconnect it when he left, I guess. Yeah, that's what it was.
That's what
so
it was.
It wasn't completely random.
I mean, he's lucky it was it wasn't, you know, other photos.
Right, I know. And God knows I look for those. But the no, I'm just but actually since then I've disconnected his account and I just have my own thing connected. But it was a weird little
thing. I had a friend stay over and he was accessing his stuff at home on Plex, and that's how I found out about it. And then I found out that there are, you know, websites out there that essentially you PayPal somebody like a couple bucks a month and they give you access to their server list.
That's
of all these pirated stuff.
And by brilliant, I mean illegal.
It's brilliantly illegal, but I mean, people are like having like a side business.
Look,
with this.
I mean, I'm not a college student, so I'm not going to engage in this activity, but I get it. I mean, I get why people do it.
And I know for a fact
how expensive the legitimate path can be.
Let me just say, I know I'm going to get a bunch of messages now saying, hey, what's that website? I don't want to say the website. Right. If you go, the only thing I'll say is you can find it on Reddit if you really search for it, unless they deleted it. That was the one thread that I saw. I don't know exactly where it is now, but
this isn't the Whereas channel.
Yeah. We're not the Whereas channel with a Z. We're not an AOL server.
Yeah.
Those were the days, Paul.
I know.
Those were the days. Now listen, I think if you want to get everything, it's going to be very expensive. If you're not a picky person, it's not going to be really expensive. If you're, you know, a single guy or you're, you know, just you and your spouse, your partner, whatever, sure. Then and you don't really watch much TV, this may be something for you. But
it's easy to spend a lot of money on this stuff if you want to.
Yeah.
I mean, you really could go nuts. Sorry if you didn't know any better.
You know, I'm going to bring something up that you said, like if you're just closed into these 25 channels, you're not really expanding your viewership. I think in a weird way, you kind of do. I'll give an example.
I just want to clarify. I didn't mean 25 channels. I mean, if in other words, you said, look, cable's going to go all a la carte, and I'm going to check them off like a sushi menu. You know? I want Fox News only. I want you know, the NASCAR channel. I want whatever it is. If you just sit there and watch that stuff, or if you watch just MSNBC and just the Wildlife Channel, whatever those stupid people would choose, you're not open to the, you know, you can't click, you know, channel up and just randomly run into something.
Yeah, that's all.
A 25 channel package. I mean, you have the opportunity to bump into stuff you might not, you know, not explicitly choose. I think one of the problems in this whole internet thing is where, you know, we can just go to websites that just, you know, spout the same crap that we think. I mean, I think it's important to be open to.
To be open, to other content. Now, I'll give an example. Like with Netflix, I've discovered tremendous amount of shows that I would have never watched before.
Yeah.
In that ecosystem, you know, the Netflix ecosystem. I was just watching that that Tina Fey one that just came out.
Yeah, with the girl from The Office.
The Incredible Kimmy
Schmidt. Yeah, I have that. I haven't watched it yet, but I will. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be the dumbest thing. I watched like two episodes. It's actually like a really cute show. It's actually funny. Like it's well done. It's you know what it is? It's Tina Fey's writing and it's 30 Rock, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yeah.
It's done well. It's quick. It's easy. It's 30 minutes. You're done.
Yep.
It's a good show. I would have never watched that. And you know what? I probably would not have watched it if it was on network television. If that was on NBC, I would have never watched it.
A lot of BBC shows on Netflix, you know, that you may not kind of run into. I mean, everyone's heard of Downton Abbey, but there's a bunch of other stuff on there. It's, it's, you know, sometimes I just go through, like, I'll just go through some, like, genre, you know, and it's like click, 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 and you kind of, there's a lot of B-movie stuff on Netflix, which is, you know, kind of garbagey, but every once in a while you'll find, like, this kind of gem, you know, and it's, yeah. I think that discoverability is pretty good.
There's a lot that goes into this. I want to hear from you guys. Do you think this is expensive, and can it? I want someone to tell me, because I know the concept of cord cutting. I know that you could essentially watch it anywhere you want, and you're not tied down to a cable company. But how do you make this inexpensive if you love television? How do you make this inexpensive if you like sports?
The other thing is, I mean, who is going to have this service and not be paying Apple for other stuff too? Like, are you also paying for extra iCloud storage? You're also paying for iTunes Match? Are you also going to pay for that new Apple service, or, you know, whatever the
success? How is the DVR service going to work on this? Because
there's more to it than this. Yeah.
If they do live, for example.
Yeah.
People are unanimously screaming Windows Media Center in a chat room right now.
Yep. I wish that Microsoft, you know, in Europe and maybe elsewhere, they sell an over-the-air HD adapter for the Xbox One.
Yeah,
I really wish they would sell it here. I would be so great.
Oh, that'd be phenomenal.
That would
I thought they were going to bring it here.
No, they didn't. They never had plans to. And I suspect that part of it might be the content deals they have with all these major content companies, most of which are in the United States, right? So, I could be wrong about the why, but I mean,
yeah.
I could imagine that being a, you know, let's see what flies elsewhere before we start doing that kind of thing. But
I guess the pass-through really was a compromise. That's like, let's meet you in between. We'll put a pass-through.
Yeah, because we don't replace anything that way, right? You still have to pay for cable. Look, we're partners, you know. Over the air, I think, would be so awesome. I'd love to have that.
All right, guys. Time to wrap it up. Hey, if you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to do What the Talk following this within the next couple of minutes. We're going to talk about last week's show a little bit. I want to touch on some of the emails I got and whatever else comes to mind. It's St. Patrick's Day, so I'm getting ready to go out and drink. I don't know. Are you going out drinking today, Paul?
No.
Not going bar hopping? Going to put on a shamrock hat? And
I don't even want to go out to get the mail.
I barely did that today. It was brutal. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Of course, therot.com, all things Paul Therot. The news source for all things Paul Therot. A lot of articles there, a lot of great pieces on there. Go check it out. If you want to support us, you want to help us out, fund us on our Patreon campaign, patreon.com/whatthetech. You get access to our bonus show that way. Also, I want to thank Harry's for supporting the show and supporting the network. They've been around for a while, so I like them and support them. You guys should support them too. And that's it for this week, guys. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye for now.